The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Women's Health Watch and probably also from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And the first article I'm going to read comes from the Harvard Women's Health Watch of September 2023. And it's a series of questions for Dr. Tony Golan and Dr. Hope Ricciotti. And the first question is, can apple cider vinegar curb appetite? My friend says she drinks apple cider vinegar at bedtime to help her to eat less and lose weight. Could it work? Scientific evidence doesn't support drinking apple cider vinegar to dampen appetite or help with weight loss, but even on a common sense level, it's not likely. Here's why changing only a single part of your routine, like drinking a shot of apple cider vinegar every evening, can't help us to shed excess pounds as effectively as a broader effort that includes changing our overall diet and exercising more often. Beyond that, apple cider vinegar's high acidity level makes bedtime a less than ideal time to drink it. Anyone prone to heartburn or gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD, should avoid eating or drinking anything acidic at least 30 to 60 minutes before sleep to lessen the odds of uncomfortable burning in the chest. Over time, drinking undiluted vinegar can also erode your tooth enamel. People who still want to consume apple cider vinegar can do it more safely and comfortably if they mix a small amount in a large glass of water or combine it with other ingredients in salad dressings. The next question is, sometimes I feel lightheaded or dizzy after I eat. Why might this happen? You're probably experiencing a fairly common condition called postprandial hypotension, or low blood pressure after eating. Estimated to affect up to one-third of older adults, this form of low blood pressure happens when blood flow is diverted away from the body areas that include the heart and brain, and instead gets routed to the stomach and the intestines during digestion. Some people are genetically predisposed to postprandial hypotension. Others develop it after a stroke or accidental damage to nerves involved with blood pressure. Another major contributor is high blood pressure, which hinders blood vessels' ability to narrow and relax normally. While the dizziness or lightheadedness that accompanies postprandial hypotension aren't dangerous on their own, they can lead to falling or fainting. The condition can also trigger nausea, disturbed vision, or chest pain called angina. To avoid low blood pressure after eating, drink a large glass of water before eating. Eat smaller, more frequent meals, and choose whole grains, beans, and lean meats over highly processed foods, which quickly pass from the stomach to the small intestine. Make sure you tell your doctor about your symptoms as well. And now we're going to go on to another article in the September 2023 Harvard Women's Health Watch. It's entitled, Medication Taking Made Easier. Shocking numbers of people don't take their prescriptions at the right dose or frequency, or even at all. Learn ways to make the task less onerous. 6 decades ago, a crooning Mary Poppins told us it takes just a spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down. But reality is a bit more nuanced. A sour taste isn't the only thing that can turn us off about taking medications, and there's far more than one strategy to make the task easier. About half the time, people on their own choose to alter how much, how often, or how long they take a medication, or whether they take it at all. In fact, 20 to 30% of new prescriptions are never filled. According to the CDC, such medication non-adherence can gravely threaten your health, says Dr. Susan Salomon, clinical chief of gerontology at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. It's linked to about 125,000 deaths in the United States every year, according to the CDC. A large number of people don't take their medications as directed, Dr. Solomon says. It's no joke, and unfortunately it can be very easy to happen without anyone noticing. Most people don't want to admit it to anyone that they're not taking their pills. About three-fourths of Americans aged 50 to 64 take prescription drugs, a proportion that climbs to 9 in 10 among people who are 65 and older. This translates into many occasions and reasons to do it wrong. Dr. Solomon highlights common explanations people offer for not taking their medications. Too many. It can seem overwhelming if you've been prescribed multiple drugs, especially if you need to take each one at various intervals during the day. Sometimes the burden of pills gets so high that people stop taking everything, she says. Burdensome side effects. From leg cramps to nausea to weight gain and more, there's a huge range of unwelcome offshoots from prescription drug regimens. Every medication we take has some sort of side effect, and some people are really sensitive to them, she says. Lack of symptoms. If you feel well, you may not think a prescription is necessary. If someone hasn't explained why they need to take the medication, many people won't do it, Dr. Solomon says. Some people can't afford to fill prescriptions or are forced to take less to make their supply last longer. Cost is a huge factor, she says. Forgetfulness. This can happen to anyone, but it's more common among people with memory problems. If there is no family member watching closely, or patients haven't spoken to their clinician, it can be hard to find out they're forgetting to take their pills, she says. Depression. When people get depressed, sometimes they throw their hands up and say, "What's the point?" It's very important to address this feeling of hopelessness, Dr. Solomon says. It is crucial to let your doctor know if you're not taking your prescription drugs and why. Start by asking her to review your medication list, since de-prescribing drugs can be just as important to your health as starting a new necessary prescription. Some people were put on medication years ago and don't need them anymore, Dr. Solomon says. Discuss with your doctor which medications you could really live without. Also, find flexibility. Doctors can often streamline dosing schedules by reducing the number of times per day a drug is taken or prescribing long-acting or combination versions. Moving all medications to once-a-day dosing isn't necessarily ideal, but it's often possible, she says. Investigate less expensive options. Your clinician may be able to find a cheaper alternative, she says. Use a pill container. An organizer lets you dole out doses for a week at a time. Then each emptied compartment confirms that you remember to take your pills. Readily available in stores and online, some pill containers include sections for multiple doses at various times of the day. Replace standard drug bottle caps with timer caps. Found in pharmacies and online, these incorporate built-in timers that track when you last took your medication and alert you when the next dose is due. Now, here's a useful article, again, from the Harvard Women's Health Watch of September 2023, and it's entitled, "When Fatigue Leaves You Drained, Depleted, and Dumbfounded. When fatigue is persistent, it's essential to learn why." If you feel as though you're dragging through your days feeling weary, weak, and listless, fatigue has arrived at your doorstep. But what's the line between feeling fatigued and merely tired? Fatigue means no amount of sleep helps you feel refreshed. Forget about mustering joie de vivre. You can barely get through the day without becoming exhausted. Being tired or sleepy is different from fatigue, says Dr. Daniel Sands, a primary care doctor at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. It's true they can overlap because if you're not getting enough sleep, you'll feel fatigued. But fatigue is different. Everyday things like walking to the bathroom or doing the dishes wear you out. You might chalk it up to getting older, since fatigue is commonly viewed as a normal part of aging, instead of a symptom of an underlying ailment. But often something is indeed amiss. Between 40 and 74% of older adults with chronic conditions deal with fatigue, according to a 2021 research review in Rehabilitation Nursing. When it lingers for weeks or months, fatigue is a problem that needs to be solved. A long list of both obvious and more opaque conditions can lead to it, some of them serious. I get worried when people have stopped doing the things they love, like going for walks, babysitting their grandchildren, or cooking, says Dr. Sohelia Gharib, an internist at the Phyllis Jens Center for Primary Care at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. If they say they're not doing those things, that's a huge red flag. We definitely want to find out why. Some contributors to fatigue are abundantly clear. If you're not sleeping well or have allergies, a cold, the flu, or COVID, you're likely to feel drained. Chronic illnesses like heart disease, cancer, diabetes, kidney disease, multiple sclerosis, or rheumatoid arthritis are also widely known to sap energy. But there's a list of less recognized causes that is just as long. You might not suspect sleep disorders, depression or anxiety, thyroid problems, infection, iron deficiency anemia, poor diet, or medication use. Chronic fatigue syndrome, characterized by prolonged tiredness, fevers, and aches, might be on your radar if you are of unshakable fatigue, but it's rarely the case, Dr. Sands says, and only considered after other reasons are ruled out. How do you know it's time to see a doctor about your fatigue? Not only when it's unexplained, prolonged, and debilitating, but also if it's joined by other symptoms like weight loss or weight gain, frequent headaches, chronic pain, muscle weakness, thinking or memory problems, mood changes, sleep problems like insomnia, severe daytime sleepiness, or restless sleep. If you have actual weakness like you can't climb stairs, shortness of breath, or trouble getting dressed or making meals, or if you're nodding off in the middle of the day when you never used to, those are big warning signs, Dr. Gharib says. In addition to performing a thorough physical exam, your doctor will likely ask you about sleep habits, use of alcohol and other substances, as she carefully reviews your medical history. Additionally, comprehensive blood testing can unearth a variety of fatigue culprits, like anemia, thyroid issues, certain infections, liver and kidney problems, and also it can guide further testing. Typically, doctors follow a well-worn credo when investigating fatigue and other such nebulous symptoms. When you hear hoofbeats, think about horses, not zebras. That means they first considered the obvious causes before looking at less likely possibilities. If someone gets almost no physical activity and tells me she's worn out all the time, most likely she's deconditioned. I get more concerned when I see a patient who runs 5K three times a week and suddenly can't run a mile. What goes along with fatigue often tells us whether something is serious or not. But in someone with no obvious clues, it's rare there's something serious going on, he adds. If your checkup didn't unearth anything worrisome, or you're now being treated after a new diagnosis, the next step is proactively boost your oomph. Try these strategies. First of all, it's very important that you move more. Staying active helps to maintain muscle mass and strength, which helps stave off fatigue. It's paradoxical. You can't get good sleep if you're not exercising, Dr. Gharib says. You'll feel even more tired. If you're starting from zero, even 15 minutes a day of exercise will get you going, with the goal of getting 30 minutes of physical activity every day, 5 days a week. You also need to optimize your diet. You can't drink from an empty cup, as the adage goes. Fuel your body appropriately by filling your plate with high-protein options, like lean meat or fish, along with complex carbohydrates, like whole grains, fruits, and vegetables. These choices will help you to avoid the plummeting energy levels common after eating processed, high-sugar foods. Healthy eating and good hydration will do wonders for making you feel better. Use caffeine strategically. There's no question it can help you feel powered up, but caffeine can also disrupt sleep patterns, especially when consumed in mid-afternoon or later. Also, you need to limit alcohol use. Alcohol has a sedative effect, ultimately causing an energy slump. Additionally, while it may help you doze off, the effect often wears off in the wee hours, leaving you awake when you should be sound asleep. Now we're going to go over another story from the Harvard Women's Health Watch of September 2023. And these are some short articles. The first one is entitled, Physical Activity May Lower Parkinson Risk in Women. Regular physical activity, including walking, climbing stairs, gardening, and cleaning, may help to prevent or delay the onset of Parkinson's disease in women, a new study suggests. The analysis, which was published online May 17, 2023, by the journal Neurology, tracked nearly 99,000 women, average age 49, who didn't have Parkinson's disease at the beginning of the study. Researchers compared participants' activity levels over nearly three decades using regular questionnaires, assigning each woman an activity score based on how often and how long she engaged in recreational sports and household activities. As women's activity levels increased, their risk of developing Parkinson's, a movement disorder marked by tremors, muscle stiffness, and gait and balance problems, dropped. Over the study duration, women with the highest physical activity scores had a 25% lower risk of Parkinson's when compared with the least active women. Preventing Parkinson's disease appears to be another reason to stay physically active throughout adult life. The disease, typically diagnosed in people over 60, remains incurable, with treatments aimed only at reversing symptoms. Now another brief article, again from the Harvard Women's Health Watch. Magnesium-rich foods might boost brain health, especially in women. Eating more magnesium-rich food is linked with a better brain health as we age, especially in women, potentially lowering the risk of dementia, a new analysis suggests. The study, published online March 10, 2023, by the European Journal of Nutrition, involved 6,000 adults aged 40 through 73 in the United Kingdom. Participants completed an online questionnaire five times over 16 months, which researchers used to calculate their average daily magnesium intake based on how much participants ate of 200 specific foods. These included magnesium-rich choices like leafy green vegetables, legumes, seeds, nuts, and whole grains. MRI imaging measured the participants' brain volume. People whose diets included more than 550 milligrams of magnesium every day had higher brain volumes, which researchers equated with a brain age approximately 1 year younger by age 55 than participants who consumed about 350 milligrams of magnesium a day. These effects were greater in women compared with men. Less age-related brain shrinkage is associated with better brain function and a lower risk of dementia in later life, the researchers said. Now here's another article from the Harvard Women's Health Watch. When everyday noises upset you. Enduring a slurping spouse, joint-cracking colleague, or throat-clearing friend can be a sigh-inducing, eye-rolling experience. But the reaction goes beyond mere annoyance for people who respond to these everyday sounds, or others like snoring, sniffling, loud chewing, yawning, and heavy breathing, with agitation, rage, and disgust. Their aversion is part of a strikingly common sensory processing disorder called misophonia, which is characterized by an outside emotional response to sounds others make. A study published online March 2023 by the journal PLOS-1 estimates that 1 in 5 adults deal with this condition, with women responding more intensely than men. They can't stand to be in the room with those sounds, says Dr. Michael Mufson, a psychiatrist and director of the Complex Diagnostic Center at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. They try to avoid those situations, but it's almost impossible to do. If you've never heard of misophonia, you're not alone. Only 14% of study participants were aware of the diagnosis before they were surveyed, but the condition's prevalence is emerging as a long-held stigma eases, Dr. Mufson says. We're seeing more and more people coming out of the shadows with it. Before, people feared their doctor was going to call them crazy, but it's no longer a hidden disorder. While scientists aren't sure why misophonia occurs, a 2022 study in Frontiers in Neuroscience suggests the disorder may have a unique neural signature, meaning it's traceable to a distinct pattern of nerves in the brain. Older adults with misophonia have likely had it most of their lives, possibly never disclosing it due to stigma, but the condition can develop at any age. It's not uncommon that it goes undiagnosed, he says. Before pinpointing misophonia, doctors must carefully rule out other conditions that can resemble or overlap with it. These include obsessive-compulsive disorder, bipolar disorder, other sensory processing disorders, affective dysregulation, which is an impaired ability to tolerate or manage negative feelings, Asperger's syndrome, a form of autism, anxiety disorders, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Not everyone with misophonia has the same sound triggers or responds with the same degree of aversion. Regardless, those affected often blame themselves for missing out on activities others take part in with ease. Feeling trapped and helpless when they can't escape sounds that irritate them, some affected individuals even lash out physically or verbally. They might avoid eating in restaurants or eat separately from their spouse or family. Imagine feeling you have to leave when you're at the theater and a person coughs. It becomes socially impairing. While misophonia has long gone unnoticed, treatment options are expanding. Doctors typically use a comprehensive approach that blends behavior-based therapies with medication. It's not a disorder without hope, Dr. Mufson says. Misophonia management. Cognitive behavioral therapy is emerging as an evidence-based treatment for misophonia, according to a small 2020 study published in Depression and Anxiety. More than a third of 54 participants who underwent CBT reported improvement in their misophonia symptoms, as well as their ability to function socially and within their families. the benefits were still apparent a year later. In a CBT program, the therapist first identifies a patient's individual sound triggers, then works with the patient to develop new responses. We develop strategies and coping mechanisms to interrupt the rage and anxiety, Dr. Mufson says. If the anxiety is too severe, then we start thinking of incorporating medication. If you can dampen the anxiety, you can really help people to feel and function better. People with misophonia can also ease sound aversion by wearing earplugs or headphones, using white noise machines, and practicing deep breathing or muscle relaxation techniques. If you know someone with misophonia, it's important not to criticize their symptoms, Dr. Mufson says. Encourage them to go for treatment. It's also helpful if they get some brief, supportive counseling to empower them to seek treatment by helping them to understand that they're not crazy. And very briefly, sugary drinks appear to increase health risk for people with diabetes. People with type 2 diabetes have higher risks of developing cardiovascular disease or dying earlier if they drink a lot of sugary beverages, including soda, fruit punch, or lemonade, a new study suggests, but that risk is lower if they drink healthier choices. The Harvard-led study involved 9,252 women and 3,519 men who were diagnosed with diabetes at the study's start and during the following 18.5 years. Those who regularly drank sugar-sweetened drinks were more likely than other participants to have cardiovascular disease, die from it, or die for any reason during the study period. Every daily serving of a sugary drink raised the risk of dying from any cause by 8%. Well, it looks like we're out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.